Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett is the editor-in-chief of the Quarterly Review of Film and Video, contributing writer at Cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, and Robin Hood Radio's very own critic. He joins us weekly. We are always happy to have him. This is the 10 best films of 2017. Hi, David. How are you?
Well, thanks very much, Jill. And what I would like to do today, yes, indeed, is to just run over what I consider to be the 10 best films of the past year just finished. Now, I will warn you right away that some of these films, in fact, a lot of these films are not playing at multiplexes everywhere and never did. Some of them are what we used to call art films. And they play in smaller theaters in, you know, college towns and that kind of thing. Some of them, however, especially by now, are very much available online or from various DVD outlets and things like that. So they're not really all that obscure, and I do recommend catching up with some of them. I've got a number of films on this list which probably a lot of people haven't even heard of before. And that's part of the job, as I see it, is to call attention to things and to recommend things that don't have the kind of budgets that give the big double-page ads in the New York Times or that kind of thing, but that are very definitely worth seeing. So I'll start out with a footnote, and I'll say that I've not included documentaries on this list. The best documentary of the year, in my opinion, was a movie by the very great French filmmaker Agnès Varda, which she co-directed with a very young artist named J.R., and it's called Faces, Places. And it's a lovely, lovely movie where the two of them travel around to various different places in France and talk with various people. And near the end of it, she gets into a kind of an on-screen, one-sided debate with the very great French filmmaker Jean-Luc Godard. And it's just a fascinating movie, and a very lovely and lovable movie, and I really do recommend it very highly. So I will go in reverse order on the 10 best narrative feature films of the year, and I'll start out with a movie called Menasha, which is directed by a guy named Joshua V. Weinstein. It's his first, he's made some documentaries, but this is his first fictional feature, and it is entirely in Yiddish. And Yiddish films have a very long and illustrious history, but we don't run across them very often nowadays. And they've always, of course, been made for minority audiences. But there is a long history of Yiddish films in the United States, Yiddish-speaking films. And Joshua Z. Weinstein has revived the tradition. And I said it was entirely in Yiddish. It's a little bit of it. It's actually in Spanish. But it's about a Jewish widower who is living in the ultra-Orthodox community in Brooklyn. And he is fighting for custody of his young son. So instead of the usual kind of movie we've had so often, which is about a woman fighting for custody of her son, here it's about a man fighting for custody of his son and running into all kinds of trouble, some of which is religious, some of which is social, some of which is a mixture of both. It's a lovely, lovely movie. It stars quite a remarkable actor whose name happens to be the same as the title of the film. His name is Menashe Lustig, and apparently the film is really quite biographical or autobiographical about him. And it's I just enjoyed it very much. It's a very poignant story, beautifully acted. So I recommend it. Second film I want to mention is a movie which is a South Korean-American co-production called Okja, O-K-J-A. And it is by Bong Joon-ho, a very major South Korean director. And it is about a young Korean girl who has a monster for a friend, sort of a BFG, sort of a big friendly giant kind of a thing, except this is not a giant. It's sort of an animal monster. And the food industry wants to make use of this monster and others like it for factory farming and earning money off of. And this little girl wants to save and protect and help her oversized friendly beast companion. It's a lovely movie, and by the way, it does actually include a few very familiar American performers: Jake Gyllenhaal, Giancarlo Esposito, and the wonderful Tilda Swinton. I recommend Okja very highly. Thelma is a Scandinavian French production directed by Joachim Trier. And it is one of many movies that came out this year that deal with kind of uncanny or supernatural or just plain unearthly subjects. Some of the year's best movies, I think, not even counting horror movies like It, for example, which is not on my 10 best list. There are several movies that have come out which are about strange things going on, and Thelma is one of them. And it is about a family drama, although it centers very much on a young woman, a teenage girl. And there is religion, there are paranormal powers, there is same-sex passion, there is coming-of-age distress, and there is parental angst and anxiety in this movie. It is a very haunting story, a very strange story. I found it absolutely riveting. Thelma, very, very worth seeking out. Now, a movie by a really famous American filmmaker, Woody Allen, Wonder Wheel, comes next on my list of the 10 best. And some people didn't like Wonder Wheel at all. Some people think it's wonderful. I think Wonder Wheel is, in fact, wonderful. It takes place back in the 50s in Coney Island. And it is another family drama. And remarkably, Justin Timberlake did just a lovely, personable performance in this film as a young lifeguard who aspires to be a writer. And this is basically a story about this young storyteller who is telling a story and also living that story. And that story is the film that we're watching. That sounds complicated. The movie is not complicated. It's a beautifully made film. Above all, it is superbly photographed by the great Italian cinematographer Vittorio Storaro. The movie has just a glowing look that never quits, never lets up. Woody Allen is working with some regular members of his team, for example, his production designer, Santo Loquasto. Kate Winslet gives a wonderful performance, one of the year's best, I think, in the movie. Jim Belushi surfaces from wherever he's been and gives a really remarkable, powerful performance. And above all, we have that glowing, pulsating simulacrum of Coney Island in the 1950s. And also, I want to mention a lot of Mills Brothers music, good old-fashioned music on the soundtrack. It's a really, really good movie. It's not a Woody Allen comedy. It has some funny stuff in it, but it's one of Woody's most dramatic films, and I really strongly recommend it. If you open your eyes and just look at this movie, it will dazzle you. It's just a gorgeously filmed movie with all kinds of terrific performances and a very involving dramatic story. The next film I want to mention, number 6 on my list, we're almost halfway there, is another American film, The Florida Project, directed by Sean Baker. Baker's last film in 2015 was a movie called Tangerine, which was filmed entirely by iPhone. I shouldn't say film, I should say digitally recorded, but Tangerine, and it's a stunning-looking film, Tangerine is. So now he's filming with film this time. Kind of old-fashioned. But once again, he is dealing with working-class experiences, and there is none of the aloofness or condescension that you sometimes find in big-deal movies about the working class. It is a very, very on-the-ground, empathetic, compassionate movie about people living tough lives, and it just has a sensational cast of mostly unknowns, although Willem Dafoe, who is just one of the most endlessly versatile actors around, gives a wonderful performance. And the movie, I won't even begin to say exactly what happens in the film. It's about kids, it's about parents, it's about all kinds of conflicts, and Willem Dafoe plays the manager of a low-end motel around which a lot of the action of the film takes place, The Florida Project. Very dramatic and lively film. There's something to look at every minute. The next film, number 5 on my list, is a movie by the very, very, very great documentary maker Errol Morris, who has made classics like The Thin Blue Line and The Fog of War. And Errol is a documentary maker, and Wormwood, interestingly, is not considered by many people to be a documentary at all. His film Wormwood, and by the way, it is out right now, you can see it anytime you want on Netflix, is actually a miniseries. So arguably it shouldn't be on my best of the year list at all, but because it's not a theatrical feature. And it's also certainly not a conventional documentary. I would estimate that it's about two-thirds documentary and about one-third reenactments, but the reenactments are so elaborately done that they really are beautifully realized dramatic scenes, just like you would see in an ordinary fiction movie. The subject of it is a man who has been obsessed for decades, and this is, again, this is real-life stuff, a man who has been obsessed for decades by the death of his father, who was working with the federal government on a secret project and was experimented on by being given LSD. And he died by either jumping or falling out of a hotel window. And his son has for all this happened decades ago in the middle of the 20th century. His son has been obsessed all these years with finding out the real story of what happened, and all kinds of things get involved in this. And that is what Errol Morris's movie is about. Wormwood is, as I said, it's largely documentary, but it has all of these marvelously directed dramatic scenes that reenact things as they may have happened, Peter Sarsgaard being the star of those scenes. And I just found it totally, utterly intriguing. I totally recommend it. Wormwood, you can see it right now on Netflix. Really, really, really remarkable stuff, with a whole lot to say about the real world in which we actually live. My number four movie for 2017 is a film called The Square. This won the top prize at the Cannes Film Festival last year. And sometimes those prizes at the Cannes Film Festival can have nothing to do with reality when you finally get around to seeing the movie. And when I used to go to Cannes every year, I used to see the movie pretty probably. You say, how could they have given this a prize? But in this case, that jury was absolutely correct. It is a co-production of a number of European countries directed by Ruben Östlund, and it is a satire. And it deals with museums, with the fine art business, or maybe you could call it the fine art racket, with public relations, with conceptual art, with interactive technology, and with kind of modern-day obsessions with loving our neighbors and that sort of thing. The movie is about a kind of conceptual art project, which opens up all kinds of strange events that operate around this one particular museum. It has some people who are familiar to us. It has Dominic West and Elizabeth Moss, who get billing way up over the title of the film, but actually they both have tiny roles, although Elizabeth Moss, I think, gives one of the best performances of the year. I really recommend it. It's a very, very, very funny and a very biting satire, The Square. Number three on my list, another movie that was very, very controversial, Mother, directed by Darren Aronofsky. I often find Aronofsky's movies, including some of the ones that have been very popular, to be full of feverishness and clutter, and I don't especially like them. Mother is totally full of feverishness and clutter, and here I think they're brilliantly handled. Mother is the story of a married couple and some unusual people who end up staying in their house and living with them, and as the story goes along, it gets stranger and stranger and more intriguing, more and more cluttered, more and more chaotic, and I couldn't take my eyes off it. It has an astonishing soundtrack. The sound is just meticulously done, as meticulous as anything I've seen all year. It's beautifully photographed, and it's a very strange and riveting story. If you like fantastical stories in films, this is a movie for you. And the same thing goes for the second best movie of 2017, The Killing of a Sacred Deer, directed by the Greek-born filmmaker Yorgos Lanthimos, although interestingly, it's an Irish-American co-production. And Lanthimos always makes movies that are very strange, movies like Dogtooth and The Lobster. And The Killing of a Sacred Deer is maybe the strangest of all. It's about a middle-class couple with a very happy and contented family life, and a young man enters that life. Very young man. And he turns out to be a very, very strange young man. And with his advent into this family's life, strange things start to happen. And he starts to attack this hitherto contented married couple through their children, through their young children. It's a dark story, a strange story, and a story which I found, again, absolutely mesmerizing in its power. Nicole Kidman and Colin Farrell are superb as the parents. Alicia Silverstone, who we haven't seen in anything major for a long time, gives a wonderful supporting performance as the mother of that very peculiar, evil teenager. And he is played by a young actor named Barry Keoghan, and it is just one of the performances of the year. So I really do highly recommend The Killing of a Sacred dear. And finally, I regret to say that my best movie of 2017 is a movie that played in theaters almost nowhere, although I saw it in a theater here in Baltimore, where I live nowadays, a movie called The Death of Louis XIV. Directed by the very, very great European filmmaker Albert Serra, and it's a French-Spanish-Portuguese production. And the title tells it all. The Death of Louis XIV is about the death of Louis XIV, played by the marvelous French actor Jean-Pierre Léaud, who burst on the scene way back at the end of the 1950s, playing an adolescent character when he was still an adolescent. Now he's sort of an old guy, and he plays the old Death of Louis XIV, and he spends about 2 hours dying, about 2 hours of screen time dying in this movie, attended by 18th century physicians, which is pretty scary in itself, and hovered over by various courtiers who are just as unctuous and craven as they can be as he gradually fades from this world. It's just not much happens in this movie except for the death of Louis XIV, but it is a visually stunning movie with this unhurried pace, and it just moves along so beautifully and splendidly, and I couldn't take my eyes off it. So those are my 10 best movies of 2017, Jill. And starting next week, I look forward to getting into the movies of 2018 again. So until then, so long.
Thank you very much, David Sterrett, Films in Focus. This has been the 10 best films of 2017.